Let us turn again to Judges chapter 7. And that was a pretty lengthy reading that we had, but there are times when such readings form just one literary unit, and it is difficult to break up such a reading. Now, the theme for our brief time is the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. The sword of the Lord and of Gideon. Now, thus far, we have noticed that Israel were oppressed by the Midianites. 7 years. 7 years they spoiled the land of Israel. And they had bought the services of the Amalekites, that ancient enemy of God's people. And they had terrorized, as it were, the land once a year for 7 years. And Israel, we took note, cried unto God. And God sent to them a prophet who spoke to them of their sins. Spoke to them of the word of God. And then we took note of Gideon. Gideon is God's deliverer, judge, to deliver the people out of the hand of the oppressor. And now we have, after Gideon's reformation of the worship of Israel and of his home, we are brought now to the point of battle. We noticed last week that the enemies of God had gathered again. Then all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the children of the east were gathered together and went over and pitched in the valley of Jezreel. So Gideon and Israel have now been brought to the point of battle. Now this is an important word, battle, and an important concept in the Christian life. We live as Christians what is called in the New Testament the Christian warfare. We are to war a good warfare. There are times in the Christian life when the possibility of battle becomes a reality. But we do battle daily, don't we? We battle daily in this world. And one thing that is needful for us to remember is that although we are called to enter into many spiritual battles, the battle, dear saints, always remains the Lord's. Though we are to strive every day in our spiritual battle, we are to put on, as it were in Ephesians, we are to put on the armour of God each day. Yet we are to remember that the battle in which we enter into remains the Lord's battle. It is the Lord's cause in your soul, and it is the Lord's cause in the land. This is the warfare and battle that we have been called to. An inward battle of the soul and an outward battle of the kingdom in the land. Now we have a wonderful example before us of how our battles belong unto the Lord. You know, chapter 7 of Judges reminds us of Zechariah 4 and 6. Then he said and spake unto me, saying, this is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel, saying, not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. And how we are reminded so much of this in Judges chapter 7, where 300 men take on the host of the Midianites. Not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit. Well, firstly, let us notice then the army of the Lord. From verse 1 to verse 8, the army of the Lord. Now, Gideon had called the people unto himself. We read of that in verse 34 of chapter 6. When the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, what did he do? He blew the trumpet. And then he sent out messengers calling the people unto himself. And yet he would come to realize that the Lord was at the head of this army. It would be the Lord who would send his army of only 300 men into battle. And yet it pleased the Lord, remember, to call Gideon, and that Gideon would blow the trumpet and call others. So the Lord is pleased to use human instrumentality in his battles. The Lord is pleased to employ us in these spiritual battles. Firstly then, in verse 1, then Jerubbaal, who is Gideon? We are reminded here at the very outset in the use of these two names of both the mission and the might of Gideon. Jerubbaal, that tells us of his mission. He has cast down Baal in the land. The worship of a false Canaanite god has been cast down by Gideon. And then it reminds us of his might. Isn't he a mighty man of valor? That's what we're told. Gideon, the mighty man of valor. The great champion of the victory within. Now leads the people against the enemy without. Surely with Gideon at the head, there would be a great sense of optimism, a great excitement among the people of Israel at the prospect of overcoming these Midianites. But this, as is always the case with God's people, was not true of all who had gathered themselves together. These men had gathered at the call of Gideon. They sought the best for the Lord's cause. They had yet again, we could say, they had yet again become jealous for the name of the Lord. But we must face a reality. And it is a reality. It is that it is natural for men to fear at such times as this. Though they may be wholly committed to the cause of the Lord, although they may have answered the rallying cry of God's deliverer, yet it is still a natural tendency of man to fear at times of battle, especially when we consider verse 12 of chapter 7. Remember, 32,000 men had gathered for Israel. And yet we're told that the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east lay along in the valley like grasshoppers for multitude. And their camels were without number as the sand of the seaside for multitude. The men who had gathered at the rallying cry of Gideon were as only a wee speck compared to this great army of Midian. So we see it is quite natural for man to fear. And there is something further taught to us in verse 1. We are told here that they pitched beside the well of Harod. What does this literally convey to us? It is the fountain of trembling. These men had gathered to go into battle at the fountain of trembling. Some of them did literally tremble at the thought of battle. Now the Lord knows his people better than his people know themselves. And I'm sure, dear saints of God, that each of us can testify to this experience. The experience in the Christian life, we are always brought to this conclusion, aren't we? That the Lord knows us better than what we know ourselves. The scriptures tell us that our hearts can at times be deceitful above all things. We deceive ourselves at times. We overinflate ourselves at times by thinking too highly of ourselves. The Lord knows his people better than they know themselves. The Lord knows that there are men among the gathered who have fear in their hearts. But not only fear. The Lord knows that the tendency of his own people is to have pride. Pride swelling hearts at times of victory. In verse 2, we learn of this. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me. And children, that just means boast. Unless the children of Israel boast themselves against the Lord, saying, mine own hand hath saved me. You see, the Lord knows us better than what we know ourselves. There are those who fear. He knows that they fear. There are those who, at the very smell of victory, will have pride swelling in their hearts that they will say, we ourselves, by our own hand, we have freed ourselves from our oppressor. But the Lord knows this. And one commentator helps us. He writes, but a victory which would have given occasion for self-glorifying might have led to the erection of another altar to another type of idolatry. The idolatry of self, equally, or perhaps more dangerously, misleading. Where does the altar of self get raised? Where is this idolatry found? It isn't as visible as the idolatry of Baal. It is found in the heart. And the Lord knows this. Lest they be given over to this new worship, this new idolatry of the worship of self. Self-glorifying. Children, what is the first question of our shorter catechism? What is the chief end for which we were made? What was the purpose of God creating us? What is that end goal? That we should glorify him and enjoy him forever. With pride in their heart, it would have been quite difficult, wouldn't it, for them to fulfill even this first question of our shorter catechism. They would have been given over to themselves and over to their own hearts. Yet the Lord knows them better than they know themselves. Therefore, the Lord sets about the accomplishment of his own will in decreasing the number of men. And you can read of that from verse 3 to verse 7. The Lord sets about decreasing the army that had gathered with Gideon. It reminds us again, doesn't it, that his thoughts are not our thoughts. His ways are not our ways. And yet the Lord's ways are truth and are right. Firstly, those that feared, they were to be released in accordance to the revealed will of God. Verse 3, whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from Mount Gilead. Now, this was recorded in Deuteronomy chapter 20 and verse 8. There we read, and the officers shall speak further unto the people, and they shall say, what man is there that is fearful and faint-hearted? Let him go and return unto his house, lest his brethren's heart faint as well as his heart. So this was according to the revealed will of God, according to the law of God. Gideon was to send the fearful home. And you see why? Lest his brethren's heart faint as well as his heart. Fear can be contagious. This is what the Lord's teaching. Deuteronomy 20 and verse 8. Fear can grow among the number of the army. One person fearing turns to two, turns to four, turns to six. Such a contagious thing is fear. So they were to be sent home. The Lord would not have fear. Secondly, we have this strange sifting, don't we, of how, when brought to the water, a man would there drink. In verse 6, and the number of them that lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, were 300 men, but all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink. So there were those who cupped the water up into their hands and they lapped it as a dog laps water. And there were those who would have went down on their knees and got what they could from the water side. We can't make too much of this, but there are a few observations that may help us. Why the men who lapped? Why were they chosen? And the men who fell on their knees were sent home. Now this was the means ordained by which the Lord's army would be known. Now the 300 men who are chosen here in this exercise showed themselves to be patient men. They were not self-indulgent or rash. The other men rushed to the water, fell down on their knees, while these 300 men, they were patient. They were controlled. They weren't self-indulgent. At the water, they remained composed and self-denying. And therefore, they remained alert at all times. These men were alert. They were composed. This was the quality of the Lord's chosen men. Think about it. He was going to send them in against a host that were like grasshoppers. There was more camels of the Midianites when there was going to be soldiers of Gideon's army, the Lord's army. But this quality was important. They were composed. They were alert. They were patient men. So that is the army of the Lord. Secondly, we note the battle plan of the Lord from verse 9 to verse 15. The battle plan of the Lord. What was the battle plan of the Lord? Well, it was to encourage the one whom he had chosen to deliver Israel. Verse 9, and it came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, arise, get thee down unto the host, for I have delivered it into thine hand. Now, we do not read here of Gideon seeking a confirmatory sign from the Lord. We have noticed this about Gideon's character, haven't we? There have been a number of occasions where he has sought confirmation from the Lord. And yet we don't read of him seeking confirmation of God here. And yet the goodness of the Lord is seen. A token of mercy. A token of mercy from the Lord grants such to his servant. He's given to him confirmation. We are confronted with an encouragement here in the last clause of verse 9. For I have delivered it into thine hand. It was already done in the mind of God. The certainty of the matter. This ought to remind the Christian of that comforting truth of Luke 22. And verse 31, And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for thee, that thy faith fail not. And when thou art converted, there is the certainty of the matter. Strengthen thy brethren. The certainty of the matter for the Christian. As we enter our spiritual battles, these daily battles, dear child of God, always remember the certainty of the matter. Before you enter into that battle, Christ has prayed for you already. He has prayed that your faith fail not. The certainty of the matter, just as it was here with Gideon. For I have delivered it into thine hand. The Lord's purpose of goodness towards Gideon. This was the Lord's battle plan. The very battle plan of the Lord was a purpose of goodness towards his servant. The battle plan was that Gideon would hear of the enemy's defeat from the lips of the enemy themselves, and that Gideon would then be strengthened. Verse 11. And afterwards shall thine hands be strengthened to go down unto the host. This was the Lord's purpose of goodness in sending Gideon, that he would be strengthened. Well, what did Gideon hear? What did he hear? Him and his companion, Phurah, what did they hear? Verse 13 and 14, they hear of a dream and its interpretation. Verse 13, and when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow, and said, behold, I dreamed a dream. And lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian, and came into a tent, and smote it, that it fell, and overturned, and the tent lay long. A cake of barley bread. It was quite possible, dear saints, that during the 7 years of oppression by the Midianites, when the land was ravaged by them, that this bread was known to be the common bread among the Israelites. This bread was the poorest of food, a common food that was known to be quite vile and difficult to eat. The bread, then, of an oppressed people. This was the bread that was dreamt of. That which tumbled into the tent of the Midianites. Now look at the complete devastation that is described in verse 13. And smote it, smote the tent that it fell, and overturned it, and the tent lay along. Total devastation is being described. But there is more here for us. The word used for the motion of the bread, it conveys to us the force of brandishing. The barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian. It conveys that of brandishing, like that of a sword being handled in battle. One writes, a cake becoming like a sword, flashing and moving as if it would hew and destroy. And it does. There's complete devastation. Now Gideon was to hear and to keep the words of its interpretation. And that is important for us, for our strengthening, because it would have been futile for Gideon just to hear the words of the interpretation and not keep them, for they wouldn't have been then a strengthening unto him. Are we keeping the word that we hear? For if we do not hear and keep, Therefore, it's not a strengthening unto us. We are taught that the fear of Gideon had already been put into the Midianites. The Midianites had heard the name of Gideon. Verse 14, this is nothing else save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. For into his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host. The name of this mighty man of valour had already gripped the Midianites with a degree of concern and fear. Gideon's name known among the oppressor. And let us not be ignorant of a truth that is before us here. The Midianites knew too well of the God of Gideon. Look at the last clause. For into his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host. They were not ignorant of the God of Israel. There was a degree of dread, of fear, hatred for this God of Israel who does wonderful works. They would have heard of the great works of this God. Many of these things drive the enemies of the gospel today. The enemies of the gospel today knowingly fight against the Lord. And just like the Midianites here, it is futile, vain confidence. This is all that it comes down to. And it is driven by a hatred for God and a hatred for God's cause. Well, the wisdom of the Lord here in his purpose of good towards Gideon. The wisdom of the Lord's battle plan is seen in Gideon's response. Verse 15, what does Gideon do? He worships God and he returns to the host. So Gideon, in hearing this, does two things. Firstly, he worships God. First things first. And then secondly, he does. He goes to do that which he has been commanded to do. Worship and obedience. The goodness and purpose of God towards Gideon. Thirdly and finally, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. Verse 16 to verse 25. It was to be the element of surprise in battle that would enable the fall of this formidable host of the Midianites and the Amalekites. The time of night, fire, trumpets, loud crying of the Lord's battle cry would all contribute to the host running, crying, and fleeing, while setting each man his sword against his fellow. We read of this in 21 and 22. And they stood every man in his place round about the camp, and all the host ran and cried and fled. And the 300 blew the trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow. Utter confusion amongst the Midianite host. The fear and the terror of the Lord had fallen upon this camp. This victory of the Lord would be so comprehensive. And we'll see the end of this victory next week. But for now we see its comprehensiveness, that Gideon would possess both the head of the wolf and the head of the raven in victory. Verse 25 we read, and they took two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeb. They slew them. They took off their heads. One who is called the wolf, Oreb, and the raven, Zeb. Their heads would be delivered to Gideon. Now, there are a number of lessons that we can learn from this victory in battle. In verse 17, we read something significant. And he said unto them, that was Gideon, said unto the host of 300, look on me and do likewise. And behold, when I come to the outside of the camp, it shall be that as I do, so shall ye do. Look on me and do likewise. Those words, dear saints of God, have a great spiritual lesson for us. The men were to look, follow, and imitate Gideon, their captain in battle. Now, dear saints of God, this should direct your thoughts to the greater Gideon. Is this not the cry of the great captain of our salvation? Does Jesus Christ not cry out to us, look on me and do likewise? Is Christ not calling us today to look on him in our battles, to keep our eyes on him and imitate him in every area of our lives and of our warfare? We read in Isaiah 33:22, for the Lord is our judge. The Lord is our lawgiver. The Lord is our king. He will save us. Who else will we look on to, dear saints, but Christ? Look on me, Christ says to us today. Look on me, dear saint of God, and do likewise. But also, we have the lesson of the trumpets. The return of the tried and tested trumpet. Verse 18. When I blow with a trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow ye the trumpets also on every side of all the camp, and say, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. This tried and tested instrument of God. Thoughts of past victories would have filled the mind of these men. They would have heard of the victory of Jericho and of the great use of this trumpet, this instrument of the Lord. And it would have encouraged these 300 men as they looked on Gideon. It would have encouraged them to blow in the might of the Lord. The might of the Lord. Now, the only sword to be wielded in the critical time of battle was to be the sword of the Lord and the sword of Gideon. The sword of the Lord and of Gideon. The connection between the Lord and Gideon had already been made among the Midianites. We took note of that in verse 14. The name of Gideon was already known. And the name of his God was already known. And with this battle cry of the Lord, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon, in the hearing of this one sword, this one Lord and this one deliverer, the terror and fear already present among the Midianites would have been greatly intensified. And the very fact that confusion gripped them all, and they turned every one his sword upon another, tells us this. At the sound of the trumpet, at the battle cry of the Lord, the enemies of God were defeated. Now, we should close with a number of observations of this instrument of judgment. The trumpet. The use of the trumpet, dear friends, is significant throughout the Old Testament. They were sounded before the destruction, before the judgment and the victory at Jericho. We read of the two silver trumpets that alerted the people of Israel to assemble at the tabernacle for the hearing of the gospel and for the following of the Lord. Numbers chapter 10. The use of the trumpet is also significant in the ministry of Christ, especially in reference to his return and victory. What do we read in Matthew 24:31? And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. The return of Christ. Notice will be given at a blast of a trumpet. Revelation 11:15. And the seventh angel sounded, blew his trumpet, and there were great voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. And we also have Paul, haven't we, in 1 Thessalonians 4:16. For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God. And the dead in Christ shall rise first. The significance of the trumpet. We should not allow the significance of the trumpet to escape our sight in Judges chapter 7. Now, in the light of what we have considered in Judges 7 and the significance of the Lord's instrument, the trumpet, the horn, we need to ask ourselves, what will the sound of the trumpet be to me? Will it be a sound of fearful dread to you? One from which, like the Midianites, you will want to run, you will cry, you will flee, you will call for the rocks to fall upon you? What I am asking is, will it be a sound of judgment to you, or will it be a sound of victory? The answer is found in Judges chapter 7. Are you on the Lord's side? Do you look on Christ as the captain of your salvation? Do you look on him and do likewise? Dear friends, don't be a Midianite. Follow the Lord. Lest you hear that cry at the sound of the trumpet, the cry will be the sword of the Lord and of his Christ. Upon that great day, that will be the cry. My prayer is for all who this day do hear, that the sound of that trumpet unto us will be a great cause of victory and rejoicing. He has come, the one upon whom we have looked on all these years, the one who has led us in battle every day, now comes for us and for the kingdoms of this world. May the Lord bless his word to each of our hearts.